When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Everyone learns a language for different reasons. Maybe you want to watch K-dramas without subtitles or talk with family members in their native language. Your life is unique. Your language learning should be too. Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation and technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Most language apps teach the same generic topics. Sapphire helps you focus on what you actually want to talk about, whether that's travel, family, work, or your favorite hobbies. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages, plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/audio to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/audio and start learning a language for real.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all the other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you for just the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. That's bwhustle.com/join.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius and Mike. And the Lakers fell yesterday to the Miami Heat, 96-94, in a replay of the 2020 NBA Finals. It was a game where the Lakers, after the first quarter, defended pretty well. And I thought we made some progress toward playing without Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder. But we shot terribly. We shot under 40% from the field, under 30% again from three, including a whopping 1-for-13 from three in the fourth quarter. Two straight games without both AD and Dennis Schroeder. And I'll get to that a little more on why I think that's important. But two straight games under 100 points without those guys. So our defense, I thought we competed. A big story throughout this season has been, you know, Lakers kind of floating around, only engaged for certain segments of the game. I didn't think that was the case with this game. They competed. Shots didn't fall. I also thought that Vogel started to make some adjustments that worked in life without AD and Schroeder, and then still has some progress to make, specifically with LeBron off of the floor. So I'd love to talk a little bit about the offensive end, Darius. Obviously, there's a certain part of this that's just shots didn't fall, right? But beyond that, what did you see on the offensive end and over these last couple of games in terms of adjusting without two of our main shot creators?
So adjusting without two of the main shot creators is, you know, things just become more of a lift for LeBron, I feel like. And I don't even want to call it a silver lining because I have a sense it was, this was very much related to Miami specifically. And if you want to go the encouraging route, it's that Vogel sort of identified this is something that is working against this specific team, or this is a way to attack this specific team. And I think it helps that they just played this team in the finals, like 4 months ago or whatever.
And game planned for them.
Yeah, and game planned for them and knew some of what their base coverage would look like and what they want to do in order to optimize LeBron specifically against that team in order to generate good shots. And
what did you see? What did they do to do that?
They started running just a ton of guard to LeBron screens, right?
And Wes, KCP, yeah.
KCP, Wes, Kuz, Caruso, like any of the other guards that were in the game, mostly whoever Duncan Robinson was guarding, right? The Miami tried to start to then scram Robinson out of the action a couple of times. And basically, the Lakers adjusted to that adjustment as well, just by basically still having a lot of times it was Jimmy Butler who was on that side. And so Jimmy would then wave Duncan off, and then he would go with the original ball screen. And then that Lakers guard would just ghost out of that screen and just clear to the other side. And then Jimmy had to go with them. And then now Robinson is alone on an island again with this single defender. And then Braun would call that guy over to come and set a screen. And they got a lot of good stuff out of that, both out of actually screening and rolling, out of pop actions, out of ghost actions, and out of short roll, like slip out actions. And the screener was doing a pretty good job, I feel like, of reading how Miami's guys were defending that, what the open spot was on the floor in order to get to. And then LeBron's a brilliant passer, and he was hitting those guys in stride and creating open shots. That's me going deep X's and O's stuff on.
No, I appreciate
like,
it. Yeah.
Like on one particular action. And like I said, the encouraging side to me was, is like they went to that against a specific opponent. And that's really like in the minutia of game planning stuff for one specific team. The other side of that is, though, is that, look, man, like they scored 96 points still or whatever, 92 points. Like,
yeah, 94. Yep.
Like it worked, but only so far. This team is still struggling mightily offensively. They are not hitting outside shots. They are not creating enough advantage within their half court sets, and they don't have any advantage creators there except for LeBron. Trez and Kuz can score in one-on-one matchups, but they're not drawing enough help to actually make teammates better.
They're more finishers than creators. And I would say that Trez is a little more of a creator than Kuz is, but it's for himself, right? Like neither guy is that much of a passing threat, right? Like a lot of times you want that shot creator to be able to score themselves, but also create for others. Then the other side of that, you got Mark who can pass and can get shots for others, but isn't enough of a scoring threat himself. So it's kind of an either or there.
Mike, so one of the premises of the Lakers offense under Frank Vogel, and Pete and I have talked a lot about this over the last 2 years, is that it's very 90s-centric within the context of, we have a great player. In fact, we have two of them. And we're going to make you help, right? And then we're going to either score if you don't help. We may score even if you do help. But if you help enough, we're going to pass to open players. And now that AD is out and Schroeder, who is also sort of a draw help level guy, the offense is struggling a bunch. Like from your interactions with the guys on the team, are you getting the sense that there's any sort of frustration starting to build up with any of these guys about some of the offensive struggles? Or do you think that they're chalking it up to, we just have to hit shots?
I think that they're aware that they are collectively tired, and some guys will acknowledge it. KCP acknowledged it last night. Some guys like LeBron don't allow themselves to acknowledge it, which goes to his just insane mental toughness, which was the same as Kobe Bryant. And that's why they are who they are, right? Those guys, those type of people can conquer the world. But you can see, you know, even in LeBron's shot, so fourth quarter, the numbers were just absurd. The Lakers were 1-for-13 from three in the fourth quarter. And LeBron was 1-for-6 overall, 0-for-4 from three. And I thought what Miami did, and this was smart, and you would expect that, right? So Spoelstra, he's thinking, okay, no AD, no Schroeder. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to way overhelp at the rim on any time LeBron tries to get in there, and he'll finish some, but we're going to give him contact. And it didn't help that he wasn't getting any calls. So that was one thing, but we're going to way overhelp on that. And that led to LeBron, you know, having one of his worst shooting nights of the year. LeBron does not go 7-for-21 too often. Okay. And that was 1-for-8 from three, but they were perfectly content with, since the Lakers were so cold overall from three, they were perfectly content with them just taking a ton of threes. And so they took 45. This is a team that is, I think, 26th in the league in attempts at 30.5 per night. They took 45 threes, and, you know, they were shooting a decent clip actually in through three quarters. And then everything just dried up. And I think it was a mix of many things, legs. And part of the reason why the legs were gone is because they were really playing much better on defense. In fact, Pete, I thought this was the first sort of, okay, AD's not here, but that doesn't mean we can't play good defense. And so that got established. Miami did not score the ball well after the first quarter. So 36 points in the first, from that point on, 23, 22, and 15. That's usually enough for the Lakers to come back and win a game. They just couldn't hit shots in the fourth. And they knew that. And that's how, Pete, I know you were watching and editing some of the sound. That's how LeBron basically broke it down. He's like, look, play well enough to win defensively. We didn't have enough shots. Like, I'm not going to worry about it. It is what it is. We're minus a couple guys. You know, we get it. We get what happened here.
Yeah, I thought yesterday's game in that respect represented some progress, right? Defensively, we did play well without. I've been talking lately about that whole idea of advantage creation, advantage extension, and finishing advantage. Defensively, Anthony Davis is an advantage eraser and covers for a lot of mistakes. Vogel talks a lot about this, and being able to play great defense without him on the court, it, like, he's obviously the crown jewel of our defense, but our defense goes beyond just him. Having Dennis Schroeder out, right, that hurts our ball pressure, but we're capable of playing good defense, even being down as we are with both Schroeder and Anthony Davis. Where we're really hurting is on the offensive end. And in that, you know, I've talked a lot about the idea of stacking advantage. Last year was the, you know, rim protection upon rim protection, put pressure on the rim on the offensive end. And at some point, the defense breaks. The flip side of that is, while we're still a very good team and we've got a lot of good players, missing Anthony Davis and Schroeder is harmful to our offense, in that if you're missing too much of something on the other end, right, not stacking, but you're lacking in the ability to collapse a defense, right, Dennis Schroeder, Anthony Davis, in the ways that they do, things fall apart. And otherwise, really good players, Alex Crusoe's been struggling, you know, Wes Matthews, KCP, Kuz, they all get put into positions that they're not, like, what they're good at is not the thing that they have to be asked to do in those circumstances. What was interesting to me, Darius, about the game yesterday was LeBron, despite his 7-for-21 shooting performance, was a plus 11 in that game. And that was because they're a paint swarm team, as Vogel talks about. So they're going to try to, you know, LeBron got a shot blocked in the paint a few times. But the reason we took 45 attempts is because they're going to collapse the paint. They're going to take all of that away. And we adjusted so that we could get these open looks. Yes, they didn't fall, but we weren't getting those open looks when LeBron wasn't on the floor. So not even close, right? Now, that's in those non-LeBron minutes, especially without AD and Schroeder.
So just one point there. Before the game, because on our last pod, we discussed Quinn Cook and maybe giving him a look offensively for Quinn Cook and Harrell. And I asked Vogel about that pregame, and he said, yeah, that absolutely. He said, offensively, Quinn Cook can help us in that sense. And he specifically said offensively. And
right.
we know Frank, and we know that he's going to tend to go, as you guys have both said, he's going to tend to go defense. And he did. So he kept it to that nine-man rotation. And they defended, as we mentioned, Miami pretty well. They defended Jimmy Butler pretty well. They defended Bam pretty well overall, although he went over the top on several occurrences. The one guy they couldn't defend was Kendrick Nunn. And he was just hitting everything, you know, from the perimeter, 5 of 6 from three, like that really killed you. Just like Joe Harris and TLC hit killed him last game. But he opted not to go offense. He figured, hey, we've got enough to get it done. We're getting enough looks to win. I'm going to stick with the defense. And he didn't play Quinn Cook. And I just thought that was interesting.
No, that's absolutely the case. And I've said this a couple of times, but from watching the tape and from having some understanding of the X's and O's is whenever Vogel has a problem, he almost invariably tries to solve it with defense, right? And like, if I have to give anything up, it's not going to be the defensive end. That's our core identity. And I think that that's defensible even in this context. So I would like to see Cook get some run because we do need to hit some damn shots for sure. But I understand that. So then it becomes a question of how do we function without LeBron on the floor? We just need to survive those minutes, right? That's essentially, we don't need to go on a 10-2 run with LeBron on the bench. We need to ideally break even in those non-LeBron minutes. And there were a couple of different things that I saw him try that didn't work out. One specifically was running the offense through Mark when LeBron was on the bench. Ran a lot of elbow series. And the problem is that since Mark is not a scoring threat in and of himself, and we don't have anybody coming off of screens that you really have to go, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap, like Duncan Robinson, for example, right? That you really have to step out on. It becomes this, like, there's a lot of switching. There's not a lot of advantage created in the first place that you need some sort of gravity from a scorer to be able to provide. And then that becomes harmful on defense. I actually thought our half court defense in particular, the whole game was actually pretty good. But when they're getting live rebounds or there are live ball turnovers, those become turn into offensive conversions as well. So I'm curious your thoughts, Darius, both on what you saw in the non-LeBron lineups in the last game and how you think those can get better in the future without both Schroeder and AD. Schroeder for the next few days, AD for the next 4 weeks or so.
So a couple of things, man. Like, I think the Lakers have some okay offensive actions that they can go to if they play them out and function with high-level decision-making within those sets, right? And so I'll give you two examples. There was a play where the Lakers went to their handoff series, their elbow handoff series, right? So ball got entered into Gasol on the right elbow, and it's KCP in the left corner. Kuz and I think Trez are going to do the exchange, right? Or it might be actually Trez is at the elbow and not Gasol. Either way,
it wouldn't be both of them together, yeah.
Right. So I think it's actually Trez that has the ball now. They go to the entry and KCP comes off and then he gets the hand off. He takes two hard dribbles and Kuz is the guy who sets the second screen. So he's then the pop man, right? When KCP comes off and curls, it's Kuz who then pops. KCP drove hard and then that collapsed the defense. He took two dribbles. He pulled up, pivoted, kicks out to Kuz. Kuz hits a three. That's playing something through all the way to basically like your fourth option within a set and milking it all the way to the point where you finally create enough advantage in order to get something positive out of that. But it also requires a certain level of execution and decision-making, right? and decision-making each step of the way in order to execute that.
There are new lineups, right? Like that's something that requires that degree of precision that you have to have familiarity. These lineups, we don't play without LeBron or Anthony Davis on the floor. So I actually would go in the other direction of, especially if we're going to have THT on the court. To me, it's THT and Trez spread pick and rolls. Like the one thing that THT can do on a really high level on the offensive end, even at this point, is be the ball handler in a spread pick and roll and then spray those passes out to the corner or get all the way to the basket. And Trez can put that pressure on the rim. But to me, like if LeBron's not on the floor, Trez needs to be on the floor because he's our best offensive player outside of LeBron right now. And I actually think, Mike, that a level of simplifying what we do in this little stretch in these lineups that come playoff time with AD, hopefully with Schroeder. Obviously, you know, injuries could be there too, but that simplifying things right now on the offensive end is how we can get some production out of those non-LeBron lineups.
Yeah, and Harrell was really good last night. And I thought the game before, he only played, I think, 15 minutes. And in this one, he ends up with 24, which is, I'd be happy if he got 30. And if you have to take some of those minutes away from Keith, if you have to take some of those minutes away from Mark, Mark played 24, Keith played 17. You know, however you want to get there, you know, Kuzma played 34. I'm fine with that, actually, especially with the way that he was playing. But yeah, Harrell is just, he's been better defensively, I think, than early in the season. And he's just always a threat on offense. So I agree with you. I'd love to see him out there more. And he was a guy that Miami didn't have that traditional, the one guy that gives him problems is the traditional 7-footer who you just plant at the rim and you're like, okay, Montrez, if you want to take that 18-footer over the top, feel free. I'm just staying right here.
And I'm 7 foot 260. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
They don't have that player. And that player there, I'll acknowledge that there isn't really a great, so it's why kind of when the Lakers last year would play the Clippers, Harrell, same thing. He would run into either AD or Dwight or JaVale, and he just wasn't able to have that same kind of impact except on putbacks, essentially. So if it's a team and a matchup like Miami, I would like to see plenty more Trez. And there are going to be matchups against like Phoenix, for example, that'll be problematic if they have Ayton on the court, but in theory, Ayton's starting and then he won't be there and Trez can go and attack the Sun's second unit. Like that, the same thing with Utah. When Gobert's not in there, Harrell has to be on the court. When Gobert's in there, you don't want him out there. That's when you want either Mark spacing out to five or AD spacing out to five. But yeah, in these type of matchups, boom, give me as much Harrell as I can have.
I get simplifying things, right? I also think that when you simplify things, the ask actually gets bigger in its own way, right? Because what you then require of people is to play as an individual up potentially a level or two than what you're typically asked to in order to generate the type of advantage that you have. And so it's an interesting... So I'm not saying I disagree with you because I think that going to Trez or asking THT to play a more natural role to him, which is sort of an on-ball player, is asking guys to play to their strengths. My question to you is, do you think those strengths are strong enough to have the type of impact where they can stay afloat in non-LeBron minutes?
There's no perfect solution right now, right? And so... sometimes they will. I think this is our best option of a bunch of imperfect options. I don't think that our offensive actions are particularly sophisticated. We run our staggers, we run our elbow series. These are very common throughout the NBA. It's also like the whole way we go through the regular season is getting LeBron and AD the type of touches that they're going to get in the postseason, and getting guys a bunch of reps in those circumstances of when to cut, when to set the pin screen, all of that. So the problem with two of our main guys out, especially one of those guys that draws that help in isolation, is that as a result of how many reps we get in that, we don't have a bunch of off-screen reps, and we don't have the personnel that has the gravity. This is ultimately what it comes down to me is, and this is a question flipped back to you, is when LeBron isn't on the floor, who has the gravity to be able to create advantage, regardless of it could be a set, it can be an isolation, it can be a pick and roll, but who is like the primary guy, or who can be that guy that draws that second or that one and a half defender, that soft double, right? Like, who can that be? Who are the guys on the team that we can kind of base our actions off?
If I can go big picture on this, if you look at the makeup of the roster and just the way that you win an NBA game and the way and you win the game in a postseason, it's almost, I don't want to say it's a waste of time, because there are certain, these actions right now could help them get through a dry spell, especially without certain stars, but you're ultimately not going to do a lot of this. And there's a reason for that. And the teams that do, like, they go in there, they go into the season and they're like, okay, wait, we don't have a star, or we've got a guy that's not quite a star. You know what? We need a system. You know, we have to take a million threes. We got to scheme it up. Basically, we have to really, and like this works in certain colleges, right, where you just have kind of the system and you plug a guy in, and that it just doesn't work in the playoffs. Even the most high level of systems, for the most part, end up getting broken down into screen roll, your star, go at this defense late. And of course, we just saw the Lakers win a championship with it. Of course, the triangle was meant as a little bit of a of a solution to that under Phil Jackson. And that took, you couldn't even put that in now because teams don't practice enough. Like you had to have Tex Winter come in, and then you have to have a guy like Jordan and a guy like Kobe to really master it. And then they would still just end up kind of running ISO or screen roll when it came down to it in money time anyway. So I like what that did for Phil Jackson. I loved it as a sort of a philosophical thing to get everybody on board. But right now I'm just finding myself like, yeah, sure. You can figure out who that next guy is and, you know, put something in and maybe it helps you get a win against Washington. But ultimately it's still going to come down to what your roster is and what the personnel is.
I wouldn't mind playing Cook and having him partner with Trez in pick and roll actions. I wouldn't mind giving the ball to THT and asking him to do some of the same, right? One of the reasons why I would almost want the Lakers to get sharper in some of the things that they do now, even if they don't create advantage with it, is that Vogel's not going to like suddenly change up a bunch of stuff relative to what they do offensively, unless it's specifically to cater to LeBron. Right. And like that's why I said, against the Heat, I thought it was sort of a breath of fresh air to see them continue to go to this similar action over and over and over again in order to try to break the Heat's defense. The flip side is, though, is that they were only going to do that for LeBron, right?
Like that's right. They're not hedging high on LeBron and sending two, or they're not hedging high on the non-LeBron lineup.
Yeah, and I'm saying even Vogel isn't going to do anything like this except for LeBron, right? If something's working for Trez, for example, right? Like Trez has this tasty matchup that he's just going to go to over and over and over again. Vogel's not going to say, all right, let's start running two or three different types of screen actions. Every possession, we're going to vary up a different screen action just for Trez in order to get him a touch so that he can go attack this one specific matchup in which he has an advantage. Right?
Maybe we should be doing that right now, though. That's kind of the point, right? Is in those non-LeBron lineups that there's value.
It's so much easier said than done, though, Pete. It's just you can't, like, again, they're barely having shoot-arounds, let alone practices. They're having guys in and out. Shooter is now going to miss two more games, then he's going to be back. And I think like what Vogel ultimately is, these guys, as smart as many of them are, and LeBron at the top of that list, it is really difficult to put something in like this and have it stick for more than a game. And that's why he emphasizes defense, because that's the thing that can stick and that can be emphasized. And then the rest of the stuff there, you know, yeah, yes, they will. Caruso said it. They added a couple of actions in. And Frank, they will continue to do so, but you just can't count on it.
Well, that's exactly why I'm advocating for spread pick and rolls, because we don't have the practice time. We have all of these lineups that are unfamiliar with each other. If we're trying to do anything with any degree of sophistication and add it in new right now, of course, it's not going to work in games. You need way more continuity than we have time for right now. But a spread pick and roll, two guys in the corner, one guy on the weak side wing. Trez comes up and sets a ball screen for Cook or THT or whatever. Sure. That's a simple action that is already in what we do that we can get some production. This is all short-term thinking, yeah, right? But you know what I'm saying? Go ahead, D.
No, it's just like, so I hear what you're saying. And I think playing Cook for a shift or two a game, fine. Giving THT his normal minutes, but asking him to maybe do a little bit more, fine. Like, I'm with that because none of that is really expanding outside of what they typically do, right?
Right.
My thing is saying, hey, in the short term, we're going to run 45 ball screens a game now, right? Like, I think that it's disingenuous to imply that that's even an approach that the coaching staff is going to consider. Within the context of Vogel and the systematic approach that he's going to take to this season. And this is just a rough patch right now. And Vogel likely just going to say, and to a certain extent, I agree with this, is, look, we're going to pull up our bootstraps. We're going to compete every night. We're going to do the stuff that we've been doing. We want to do it better, right? Next man up. We'll get through this rough patch. And in 3 weeks or 4 weeks or 6 weeks, like, we'll hopefully be back to the level that we were at maybe 4 or 6 weeks ago, right? And get this team on the right path that they need to be in. Like, It's like the same argument that I saw yesterday online related to the report that DeMarcus Cousins and the Rockets were going to part ways. And there were a bunch of fans in my mentions basically saying like, yeah, like Boogie would be like a great option for like the Lakers. And I sort of pushed back against that idea. My comment to that was, this is a rough patch, man. Like, it's a rough patch with health. It's a rough patch in terms of like their mental and physical stamina. They need a break. And short-term stopgap type fixes all sound good in principle. But in practice, what this team needs is a good 2 weeks off and a chance to recharge their batteries. And I don't think any sort of fixes on the margins are really going to turn the ship around at this point. Like, you may get a little bit of success here or there, but this is the NBA, man. Like, you run four or five straight ball screens with THT and defenses are going to adjust. Like, you do the same thing with Cook and defenses are going to adjust. And that's where the individual ask of those individual players, the lift becomes too heavy for them. And then you end up in a similar rut to what you were in before. It's why I would advocate just doing what you've been doing and asking them to try to do it better and see where that gets you.
Look, Pete, I want to interject not so much on your behalf here, but like towards your point. From a coaching standpoint, you can put more of that stuff in and just like just so that you have it. And then the players have to be the ones, at least in part, to decide if they're going to go execute it more. And so you don't, just because you're introducing, hey guys, look, if you get in this situation and we put Quinn in the game, right, here's what we want you to run, like that, here's an option, and you drill it a couple times. So it's just, so it's not something that, hey, this is what we have to do. This is the scouting report, and it's going to depend on Quinn Cook coming in. Because guess what? Then they're going to take advantage of Quinn Cook on the other end. But at least I don't think you're wrong in just putting that out, putting that idea out there. And I think, by the way, that they have talked about it some. So but that's all. You can sort of have it both ways, because I agree with Darius, big picture. But that doesn't mean that you can't introduce a couple of things to try and get you out of a rough spot if you need it.
Yeah, this is certainly a rough patch. But part of it, if we were going through a rough patch and we had our full complement, or even just Schroeder, right? AD is going to be out for about 4 weeks. Schroeder is going to be out for a few more days. So I'm just talking about these next couple, like this Washington game, for example. I think it's an important game coming up. I think we need to win this game. I think we need, Washington's on their longest winning streak right now, four games in the last 3 years, right? They're not a good team, but they're playing some of their best basketball of the season right now. And after Washington, I think we've got Utah. We've got, like, we need to win this game, right? And so running, I'm not saying just run ball screens over and over again, right? That's the only thing that you do, but you can mix it up between those ball screens, Trez on the left block. But continuing to do what we do for the sake of long-term continuity, it's not long-term continuity because it's not running through Anthony Davis. It's not, like, these are not plays or personnel that are going to be doing this in the playoffs. So I think that there's some degree of value, even if it is short-term. I'm totally with you, D. Let's get to the All-Star break. That's what's important. But I think that there's a way to do that, in a way to pick up a couple of wins that, in the absence of Schroeder and AD, what we normally do won't work because we're so predicated on individual shot creation, the way our offense is built, that in the absence of that, we need to make some adjustments, or else those lineups without LeBron on the floor are going to continue to be really, really bad on the offensive end.
They're going to continue to be bad. Breaking news. Breaking news, like, and I don't mean to sound, I don't know, flippant here, or and I don't want to turn this into an argument at all. A healthy disagreement is fine. What I will say is, though, is I just don't see the value. I'd like to win the games. I'd like to win the games. This team right now is in such a funk and in such a hole that, you say we need to win the Washington game. I would not be surprised if the Lakers lose this Washington game. Like, maybe they'll play well enough to win. Maybe Braun has a big night. Maybe Braun, Kuz, and Trez all have a big night on the same night. Maybe
Westbrook could just miss a million shots too. That you know.
Or he could look at the Lakers perimeter defense the way it's been playing of late and say, yeah, this is the game where I'm going 10 for 16, which is sort of been what's been happening to the Lakers of late. It's why this stretch of games, to me, honestly, like, I was frustrated against the Heat game. I really wanted to win. Like the look on Alex's face at the end of the game, like after he missed that shot, like I felt for him. Like they had worked their asses off in the second half in order to win that game. But when I watch this team, and we've all watched so much basketball over how many decades now, like this to me just looks like one of those stretches where it's just like, look, man, if there's any part of the season that does not matter to me right now within the context of like where this team wants to go, it's this stretch right now that doesn't matter. And so your argument to me, Pete, feels like exactly. It doesn't matter. So since it doesn't matter, let's tweak this and do that and try to do a couple of things in order to get some wins that would be helpful, I think, for mentally, psychologically, and just to give this team a boost. My piece is that, yeah, it'd be nice to win these games, but you know what? Like this team doesn't have it right now. And I don't know what to say about that, but they don't. They don't.
So just to put a bow in this before we take a break and get on to kind of how this impacts the rest of the standings and such, I would say, Darius, that what you're describing right now is the way that I generally am after the games in describing the Lakers and saying, here's why it doesn't really matter, basically sort of explaining it away for the big picture. But I don't think that's the approach that the team should take. I don't think that's the approach that the players should take, or certainly the coaching staff. They want to be more in the moment. Hey, here's the situation. I get you guys are tired. So what? You got enough talent to win this game. Like that, every game they go into, they have to preach it that way. And they shouldn't look at Washington like, man, we're in this rut. You know, the All-Star break's coming up. Let's just, so, and I don't think you're suggesting that, but I do think it's important to have a distinction. And part of what Pete's saying maybe is with the schematics or the game plan, you know, hey guys, let's put this in here because we don't want to lose three in a row. And that's all. If they lose the game, I will not freak out, but I do think that they should try not to lose the game.
If there's one thing before, because so you can respond to that in a sec, Darius, but in the post game, both Alex Caruso and KCP mentioned, hey, we got to do more. We've been putting too much on LeBron. I think part of LeBron's MVP case for this year is that there's been a bunch of guys from AD before he's been out with the injury, from AD to KCP has been off for the better part of a month. That game last night with just 11 points broke a streak of 7 straight games under double digits, right? And he hasn't scored more than 11 points since we played Milwaukee, right? Remember that game? That was a month ago. There have been a bunch of guys who have been able to kind of cruise and go below the radar, and we've still been able to be 22-9 while LeBron has carried such a load. And both Alex and KCP were like, you know, we need to step up a little more and not rely so much on LeBron. So I guess the arguments that I'm making, I agree with you, Darius, that this time we are going through a rough patch. In the ultimate, does this impact the Lakers' chances to win the title or anything? I think this stretch is almost meaningless in that respect. That said, the day-to-day being in the moment, like it does matter. We do need to have that appropriate fear and all that. And I know you're not saying otherwise, but I do think it was interesting. Both Alex and KCP said like, hey, all of us need to step up. And I do think there's value in that in this period of time because LeBron can cover for a lot of sins and he has so far this season.
Yeah, I don't think I've articulated myself well. I'm saying that I don't see a need to make a bunch of changes or tweaks to the game plan. And I'm happy that Alex and KCP say we need to do more. We need to play better. That's true. It's true for those two specifically. I think it's true for Trez on a certain level. I think it's true for Kuz to a certain level. Like, they had very good games the last game, right? But there's going to be a stretch now with Anthony Davis out where that needs to be up, probably up a level and consistently from night to night, right? It's true for Wes. It's true for Mark. All of these guys, they need to do more or play better. So I'm on board with that. I'm on board with them playing harder, and I'm on board with them playing smarter. I think that they can do all of that within the context of what they already do. And I'm with you guys within the context of, yes, give THT more opportunities to do things that he's good at or Cook to get in the game at all and just play his normal game, right? What I'm not necessarily saying is that, like, let's change a bunch of stuff in order to try to get a single win against the Wizards, for example. That's why when you said, like, we need to win this game, and I'm just like, do they? Like, do they really? Like, I know it'd be nice to win this game. I know they don't want to lose three in a row. Like, I get all of that. My thing is, though, is you don't got to change a bunch. What you need is for Wes to not go 2-for-7 on threes. What you need is for Bron's shooting to come back a little bit and lessen the load a little bit on him so that he has more legs in order to finish some of these games. It's all intertwined. I just think that you, as a coach, personally, my philosophy would be more, I'm going to ask you to do what we do, but do it better and do it better for longer than what we have been. You guys are capable of that. That's my ask of you. Let's go get it done.
This, I think this mostly supports Darius's point, but you guys remember last year in December and the Lakers had played, it was something ridiculous. It was something like, 12 of 15 games on the road or something. And so it was, you know, it was here it is. I'm looking at it right now. So at OKC, at Memphis, at San Antonio, at New Orleans, then they came home for Washington and Dallas, then at Denver, at Utah, at Portland. And those were the three like statement wins. I thought they beat all those teams' asses and it wasn't that close. And then after that, they had to go go home game against Minnesota, then at Orlando, at Miami, at Atlanta, at Indy, at Milwaukee. It was just this brutal long road stretch and they just kind of petered out. Right. So they lose at Indiana. AD doesn't play in that one. They get AD back in Milwaukee. They start slow. AD finishes strong. They lose that one. Then they lose to Denver at home. I think Bron missed that game. Then they lose.
He did.
Then they lose the Clippers on Christmas. And that was sort of, that was the four straight losses. And, you know, internally, I think if you looked in the outside, it's like, oh, what's going on with the Lakers? But it's so easy to explain. Just like right now. It's so easy to explain why they're losing. They're tired. AD's not playing. Shooter's not playing. There's no fans. There's no juice. They haven't gotten a break since the, it's like there are 15 reasons why they're losing. So I get it. Like I think we've sort of explained that enough. And I don't think we even really disagree, right? With what
for sure.
Total approach is right now.
I guess to put a bow on the Miami game in particular, I thought this game represented some progress in that we defended better, and especially as the game went on. It was the best defense we played without Anthony Davis, and doing that without Dennis Schroeder is impressive as well. I thought we found a reliable action against Miami, because what I'm asking Darius is to turn the dials of what we already do rather than injecting a lot that is new. We run spread pick and rolls, maybe not with THT, maybe not with Quinn Cook. So to that point, fair point, right? Like it's different than what we normally do. I think that we made progress in, you know, the LeBron lineups. He was a plus 11, even though he didn't shoot well. And we created a lot of open shots because Miami hard hedged with Duncan Robinson. We were popping, going into the short roll, all that stuff you talked about earlier. I think we need to do that with our bench units too, right? And that we need to just turn the dials of what we do and access certain things that we do more often and some things less often as a function of the personnel. So it's not some massive change that I'm advocating for, but rather I think we figured out some of how to play without AD and made progress in that respect, but it's those non-LeBron minutes that we still need to grow on. So anyway,
100% agree with just finding things that work. I think I would lean more towards decision-making, individual decision-making within the things that we've already been doing. There are just things that guys are missing a read here or there, and it's because they haven't been put in these same positions of shoot pass decisions without these specific guys on the floor. And it requires a certain amount of recalibration within their own mind, within their own role, within the actions that we already do. And that's sort of the bigger picture point I've been trying to get to, but haven't really within all of the blabbering that I've been doing.
No, for sure. Well, that's what's so fascinating about basketball is there's these two approaches that we're advocating, and there's a dozen more that Vogel could take, and he's probably not going to go either of our suggested routes, right? That's what's fun about it. I think in this environment where there's so little practice, it's difficult to ask guys to take on new roles or make better decisions without getting those reps in practice, which is why I've advocated for the simplification. Anyway, let's take a long overdue break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what this stretch means in terms of seeding, how important seeding is for the Lakers. And we'll do that when we come back. Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions, and now they want to help even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily Instant Karma purchase reimbursements on items up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Credit Karma Money has already given away over $3 million in instant karma to 50,000 Credit Karma members and counting. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll be automatically entered to win $1 million. Credit Karma Money. Progress starts here. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated, member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply. So Lakers are 22-9, tied with the Clippers for the second best record in the league and the second best record in the West. You've got the Phoenix Suns are two games back of the Lakers, and the Portland Trailblazers are game back from them. Mike, in yesterday's postgame comments, somebody asked Kuz about the idea of seeding, and Kuz was like, it doesn't really matter. You're going to meet these teams at some point in the playoffs, a Utah, a Clippers, LeBron. You know, they made it to the finals as a four seed a couple of years ago. So in this stretch, I'm just curious your overall thoughts on the importance of seeding, how you see the Lakers approaching that going forward and all that.
I mostly agree with Kuzma, and part of what he referenced in his comments was that LeBron made it to the finals as a four seed one time. You know, it doesn't really matter. I don't know if there's going to be a true home court advantage this year. But one thing I got to thinking, and I don't know if this has been clarified by the NBA. Let's say that we're in May and the playoffs are starting, and in Utah, COVID cases have gone down to some minuscule percentage and the vaccines are way up there. And they're like, hey, well, right, which would be great anywhere, period. But in terms of the NBA, let's say that in LA, it being a bigger city and a more, a more progressive government, they're like, yeah, okay, fine. Maybe we can get to 1,000. And in Utah, they're like, yeah, we're good for 15,000. Like that, that type of thing is going to be interesting, because is there going to be a big advantage for the Texas teams or for Utah or for Phoenix compared to the Lakers and the Clippers in terms of having fans? Or now that I'm thinking that, maybe it'd be a little harder in Utah, but maybe just like Laker fans would travel en masse and buy up all of the tickets, even in all these road bills. But all right, so take that aside. The home court, I think, is something that we are a little bit unclear of. But even if the Lakers didn't have home court, like, I think they'd be so pumped up to be playing in front of any fans that wouldn't necessarily be some massive disadvantage for them. So all of that aside, what I'm focused more a little bit more on the standings is just like, okay, you've got Phoenix. Do people realize that they have won 9 of 10 games? And in fact, let's see, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13 of 15. Like they have really started to figure it out. Chris Paul has figured it out. Devin Booker now is able to be a little bit more aggressive than he was for the first week or two when he was trying to let Chris Paul put in this plan. They are looking really sharp. Portland is winning all these games despite not having a bunch of their guys. Now, you know, I don't think the Lakers are scared of Portland. They know what that matchup is, but it's just I don't think we can take for granted that the Lakers, given that AD is going to be out for a month, given the fatigue, given the malaise, are just going to be a guaranteed 1-2 or at this point, even 3 seed for sure, unless they really decide that they want to be, which we won't know until after the break. And again, until AD returns. So it just got me thinking about it. I haven't come to any grand conclusions yet, Darius, but it's something that's starting to creep on my mind as we see the Lakers slide a bit and we see some of these other teams rise, as to at a certain point, do they say, all right, this is kind of far enough in the standings that we're going to fall regardless of home court advantage?
So a couple of things. Do I think the home court advantage matters? I guess that's a TBD. The fan stuff may impact things. The players' mentalities when they don't have fans maybe in their own home arena but have fans on the road, how does that impact them in terms of their general approach? Does that give them a different type of advantage, right? Because they're hype now, they're even more hype for road games, and maybe the team who's used to having fans at home, maybe they even have bigger letdowns on the road where there are no fans, right? Like, there's a bunch of stuff that could go a different way. The way I would frame it for the Lakers in terms of your question about, like, do they look at the standings and say, is this far enough now? I actually view this a different way, Mike and Pete. I'd love to get your thoughts about this. Is assuming relatively good health. That's why I said, like, in a month from now, I'll love to see where the Lakers are. But assuming relatively good health, if this Lakers team is who we think they are in terms of talent, in terms of just will and drive in order to general competitiveness that I think they're going to need in the playoffs, right? Even though we're talking regular season here, they're going to go on a run.
Completely agree.
And if they don't go on a run, then, you know, the tone of my comments, at least on this podcast and in what I write, are going to change pretty drastically. Like, there's an idea that we've been presenting on the pod a fair amount that, like, we know what the Lakers ceiling is. And I think that that's true. I think we do know what the Lakers ceiling is. There's a certain amount of conflating knowing what their ceiling is and a certain assumption that at some point they're going to reach their ceiling. Right. And there will be a point in time in this season where it will become more clear to me whether or not it is likely or not that they will be reaching their ceiling. And so if this team is who we think they are, right, and we've been saying it for months that we think this team is the championship favorite, that they're the best team in the league, that they've got all this depth, that they're well coached, that they're competitive, that they've got the two best players, yada, yada, yada. If they're actually that team, at some point, they're going to have their own stretch, Mike, of 9 out of 10, 13 out of 15, 19 out of 21, or some absurd number. And they're going, and the standings will take care of themselves.
That's where I'm at, is that, like, the wins and streaks like that are results of what kind of basketball that you're playing. It's, of course, all of this is always dependent upon health, right? Like, there's no expectation of LeBron or AD to play all 72 games necessarily. But if AD ends up missing 30 games, of course, that's going to, you know, that's going to hurt where we are in the standings. But assuming relative health, and this is more LeBron and AD, if some of the role guys end up missing time, I don't think it changes our fortunes a ton because we've got a great deal of depth. But if we're playing, we were a half game or a game out of the best record in basketball with Anthony Davis playing nowhere near what he's capable of playing, KCP drifting for a month, Markieff Morris hasn't joined us this season yet for the most part. A lot of this team is under what they're, is not performing to what they're capable of. And I'm not talking like playoff capability. I'm talking like, can KCP score 10 points in a regular season game and do it more than every 8 games, right? These are not terribly high expectations, right? All of that was true, and we were still a game away, right? This is a period point of the season, and I think we've seen this in Washington, actually, is a team that benefits from this, and the lethargy and all of that is so pervasive throughout the league that if you are able to summon that and able to be playing together right now, you can go on a run. I think that's part of Utah's success, right? I don't want to conflate everything that they've done to just like, oh, the league kind of stinks right now and isn't playing hard and they're the one team that is, and therefore they have the best record in the NBA. But
Pete, that's, you're right though. That is what's going on with them. That's what's going on with Phoenix too. These are teams that are fired up because they are together. They have cohesion. Like they have their, like, now kind of feels like their time. And there's these other teams like the Lakers and the Bucks and the Nuggets and the Heat and the Clippers that aren't right in that space. So I think that's a totally apt way to describe it. And the Lakers also haven't yet needed to make a statement with a certain game or a certain, like, with a certain win. And they felt they had to last year, you know, Milwaukee and the Clippers in March, as I mentioned, Denver at Portland at Utah. That was like, okay. And we haven't seen them yet get to the point where they feel like they have to make a statement. And they will.
So, Mike, I'm looking to, after the All-Star break, and this has been circled for me from the beginning of the season, for when a ramp up starts. And that's just a guess on my part. But I will, to Darius's point, right, like, if they don't go on that type of run, or if they don't show that they are what they think they are, then that recalibration starts to happen. But I'm not, I have not been in a place where I've been thinking that that's going to happen until after the All-Star break. That's where I've really been putting value on this season. Are you guys in a similar spot where, like, where you're looking toward after the All-Star break for that to happen?
Yes. I think this season will very much be much more in line with what we thought having LeBron on the team was going to look like in the first place, right? Which is the general sort of feeling things out, getting an idea of what your team is, and then slowly ramping up as the season goes on, and then to hopefully be peaking around anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks before the playoffs start, right? Where you look to be in the type of form that you want to be in going into the playoffs. I want to sort of pivot, though, because while you were talking, Pete, I had, and Mike, please answer Pete's question as well, but I wanted to put this to you as well, because I'd love your sort of media perspective on this question that I have. One of the things that I thought fueled the Lakers last year was sort of this general sense of people don't believe in us. Right. It was LeBron was the washed king stuff. And like the AD stuff was like, there was still, we've talked about this before, but like his name was a little bit sullied from the trade request and his departure from New Orleans. And there were all these redemption stories with the team. And honestly, going into the season, a lot of teams had them second or third or maybe even lower in the West, with the Clippers being the presumptive favorites. And this year, I feel like it's been the opposite. Everyone has said the Lakers are the favorites. Like, even as the Jazz are ripping off these long win streaks, people are still just like, I'm not sure about the Jazz. The Lakers are probably still my favorites. Mike, I thought that road trip that you mentioned, where those signature wins, the back-to-back in Utah and Denver and Portland, that those were sort of in response to like a lot of media chirping, like, their schedule's been soft. Like, who have they played? Who have they beaten? They can't beat the good teams. They've already lost to the Clippers a couple of times. Like, and there was a lot of that stuff going on. And they went out and said, oh, like, that's what you think? Well, I'm going to go out here, or we're going to go out here, and we're going to kick these teams' asses, right? And you don't know who we are. We're going to show you. And I feel like this year there's been a fair amount of like, oh, we don't have to show you. You already think that we're that. And so I'm wondering if maybe this downturn will in a weird, perverse way, sort of help them find their stride in terms of like, maybe the doubts do start to come and they do sort of start to feel like they have something to prove again, or am I off base with that? Take it wherever you want to go.
No, you're 100% on with that. And it's also, I think the season sets up decently well in this case, in that now is a good time for this lull, and their fast start has allowed for it in terms of standings, in terms of confidence and those other things. And so this should shape up to be where they can make a final push, like Pete just referred to, and then the standings sort of take care of themselves in one way. And then they also can, whether it's for themselves or for media, when everybody now, when they see that the Jazz are number one in the power rankings and teams are starting to pick them, you know, that stuff that will start to get to them, and they will get the questions then from people like me. Hey, like before the Utah game, this is what I was going to ask if AD were playing, and now I probably won't. But hey, Brad, did you hear Giannis say that he thought that Utah was kind of the team to beat in the West? The team, just little stuff like that, right? That you, and it, wait, and they're like, in Darius' voice, oh, you know, that's the type of stuff that I think they're not quite ready to engage in, but they will be soon. And soon being after the All-Star break, once they know what the rest of the schedule is, once they get a look and see, okay, here's this trip, you know, we still have to make the trip East against certain teams. They already did one Eastern trip. And they also are going to have a bunch of home games against some teams at the end of the schedule too. So I think all that's coming, and it is something to look forward to, because we will see them flex again. They are not flexing right now, but we will see the flex come.
Yeah, I think in terms of seeding, I think it ultimately doesn't matter a whole ton. It's also the only reason we're in the conversation for the four seed is more the only reason we're talking about potentially slipping is because those teams are playing exceptionally well. The Suns are 19-10. How often does a four seed play 655 percentage basketball, right? It's relatively uncommon, and the West is very strong, particularly relative to the East. But I think that this pre-All-Star break, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this is that kind of toned down, ramped down version of the Lakers that we've seen is intentional, right? And that's why after the break is where I'm really going to start putting more stock in how the Lakers are playing. You know, any final thoughts, D, before we wrap it up?
No, I think that's just a good place to end, honestly. Like, look, man, I hate to beat a dead horse here, but I just think that this is just an incredibly tough stretch for this team right now, both from a health standpoint, which is unfortunate with AD, and then Schroeder, who is apparently in contact tracing, but there's been no official report about that. But them being out, and just the general sort of repeat, like trying to defend your championship stuff that comes up every year for most teams who are trying to do exactly what the Lakers are trying to do. And it's all sort of hitting them at once. And I think it's unfortunate for them. In the big picture, I hope they can be better off for this, but time will tell. And I just want them to get the needed break that they need, though. And especially LeBron, who I know that he will be reasoned in his comments, but during the games, I'm seeing more and more like sort of bits of frustration from him coming out. He's clearly super competitive. He wants to win these games, and it's not happening right now. And so almost for his own sort of mental health too, I want them to sort of play better. And I want guys to lift him in the same way that he's been lifting them up. And so those comments that you mentioned earlier from Alex and from KCP, those are heartening for me to hear, because I hope that sort of symbiotic relationship that all teams need to have between their role players and their stars, that's been out of balance a bit lately. And I'm hoping if there's something I want to see in these next handful of games, it's for those guys to lift LeBron up, even if he can't perform to his normal standards, because his lift has been so heavy so far this year.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why I think the Washington game is important to win that.
That's fair.
To, you know, get that even mental health standpoint back on track.
The only thing, it just made me chuckle with the LeBron stuff, because it's another one of those conversations that we've heard a million times in his career. And guess what? If LeBron's on the court, he's doing the heavy lifting. Sorry, you can't. It's just what's going to happen. Part of it's because that's what LeBron likes to do. Part of it is because he's too good not to. So yes, in the terms of like, if Caruso missed a shot that could have tied the game, he was in, from my vantage point, it looked like he was from, I just assumed that he was spaced out to three. He wasn't. Or Wesley Matthews could have hit the three on the previous possession, which was kind of a weird play in the fact where he wasn't set, blah, 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 blah. So all that stuff could happen. Those guys want to deliver for LeBron, but you're not just going to, like, these guys are just going to dominate some other team where LeBron can just coast through the game. You know, and I know you guys aren't saying that. It's just like,
yeah.
Not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, got this Washington game coming up on Monday. Let's hopefully get that W, have everybody pick up a little more slack so that the heavy lift that LeBron always does isn't quite so heavy. But until then, listen to the Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
Yes, Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Score. Two. Score. One. Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.